My name is Anne McElhenney.
August, I'm Phelan McAleer.
Welcome to the Anne and Phelan Scoop. It's week 46. That's 11 months and a bit of the two-week flatten the curve lockdown. I began, Phelan, you'll notice, to become a little bit more vague about how long it is since the lockdown, because I was counting the weeks and I feel like I might have made an error, because rather than doing the calendar months, right, I'm doing the four-week months, right?
Yes.
Do you understand the difference, right? So anyway, whatever. So basically, we're very close to a year. It's very close to a year.
Since the government lied and said it's just going to be 2 weeks.
So we have a lot of Hunter Biden news that we will be bringing to you today.
On today's show.
And there's a pandemic, and the schools, the teachers, and the teachers' unions are teaching us about what really, really matters.
Yes, indeed.
In this pandemic time.
And how bloody wokeness is destroying my TV. We'll be looking at that.
And the squads, tearful, non-traumatic syndrome speech. Do you like that?
Yes.
Non-post, non-traumatic syndrome speech. We're going to get into that. And the New York Times have an expose about Costco chicken. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. But it's more of an expose of the New York Times journalism than it is about anything to do with a wee chicken.
Well, it's exposes the New York Times attitude to journalism.
Correct. And that then segues beautifully into me being able to do a recipe involving chicken. And I have something very, very lovely from the internet. But we want to start, by the way, today by telling a little story about what happened to us over the weekend and how I learned something about my husband. Well, that's not true, actually. Actually, you know what? That's probably not true. You actually behaved in total character. So we went out to dinner. Woohoo! Because we're free now and the restaurants are open here. So we went out to celebrate. And
it's up on, was it up on Firth? Up in Melrose.
It's up somewhere there.
Up.
Up there in a nice place, a lovely restaurant.
Melrose. So, we live in Venice. We're driving up to Melrose, which is like a 35-minute drive through the grimy parts of LA and some not so grimy.
And by the way, it's getting late and I'm realizing we're going to be 5 minutes late and we're very, very punctual and I don't like that. So, but anyway, we're stopped at the lights and we're about 3 miles away from the restaurant. I remember looking at the map and thinking we're 3 miles away and we're sitting there at the lights and then guess what happens?
So the lights, I believe the lights changed to green and a truck comes
no,
barreling.
No, I think they were in orange, but anyway.
Well, so, but a lady walked across the pedestrian crosswalk in front of us, I believe probably against her signal, she wasn't supposed to walk, and what comes barreling across the junction, only a white pickup truck, probably trying to beat the lights, and smacked into her bicycle and knocked her down. And right in front of us, right there in front of us, like in glorious Technicolor. And I looked, and I could literally, almost looking side on to the truck, but I couldn't see in. He was just a little bit past, and immediately jumped out to help the lady. The truck driver stopped, the driver of the truck stopped. He drove forward a little, stopped again, and then drove off. It was a hit and run.
An actual hit and run. So I'm out there on the so I've jumped out of the car. I have...
You jumped out of the car, don't be giving away the story, to help. And I am looking at this truck, not exactly barreling off, but going off. So I immediately do a U-turn.
So from my angle, I see Phelan speeding off after the white truck. By the way, quick to mention that the girl is fine.
Okay.
The girl is fine. No, I think that because people will be listening upset.
Well,
I thought
the girl was injured, right? She was injured. So I thought,
she was injured.
The cops will be coming, the ambulance will be coming. But I was only going to go and get a picture of the number plate, the license, as you guys say, the license plate of the truck. So at this stage, the truck is well, I thought, I won't even catch it. Because although I said, it didn't happen as quick. It took me a few minutes to think, I should go. So I go around a few corners, a few hills, and there's the truck in front of me. Quite a distance away. And it goes around a corner and I put the shoe down and... there it is again, it's right in front of me. And next thing I see, it take a left turn down a quiet street and go, okay, it's going home or whatever. So I follow the truck and we come out onto a big road. And I think, okay, I can follow him out there. And just as I am coming out on the road, there's a lights up above and they change. And this suddenly 50 cars come flying and I have to wait for them. So I'm then suddenly 50 cars and a lot of time behind the truck. The truck is gone. There's no point in me even trying.
Cut to me. Back over there with the lady who has been tossed off the bicycle. Now both of us are standing, her beside her bicycle, and her name is Mary, and she's really nice. And I've checked out that she's fine. The bike is destroyed. And she just wants to go home. And I said to her, where do you live? And she said, I live two blocks from here. So, you know, after spending quite a bit of time with her, she toddled off and she was fit to walk and all of that. And I got her telephone number and I thought, I'll phone her later on to see that she's okay. And then I thought, so I'm standing on the thing and I realize I don't have a phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I need to mention, Anne's phone was left.
I don't have a phone. I don't have any money. And I don't have a mask. So there you go. So that's quite a dilemma, right?
Because your phone is in the car.
Yes.
When I drove off.
Correct.
Your phone was sitting there.
When Anne jumped out
to help the lady.
So I stand there for a while.
She didn't take her phone.
When the lady leaves, I'm thinking, the lady's like, I said, my husband will be back in a minute. You know, he's just gone, whatever, he'll be back. Then she's gone, and then it's like 5 minutes. Of course, I don't know because I don't have a timepiece, but I realize a lot of time is passing. And then I'm remembering who I'm married to. I'm married to someone who has a disturbingly bad sense of direction. And I'm thinking, wherever he is now, he's lost. And whatever it is that I can be sure of, he has no idea how to get back to where I am. So then I think I need to start walking.
Yeah, so
I remember that I have 3 miles to go to get to the restaurant, and I also don't know which direction to go in. So I start walking. I end up on this really dark
road.
Can
I just say, at this stage, I am driving around trying to recreate my steps. And I even went to the stage of re-putting in the directions from our home to the restaurant and trying to go along that
road. Doesn't work like that
because the road had changed. And I have no clue.
This is LA, by the way.
And by the way, I didn't look at the street names that we were.
I could have been murdered.
When you're in GPS, you don't pay any attention to the street names.
I could have been murdered. Start walking down a dark street and I think, oh God, this is far too dark. So I came out smart enough. I went. Then I found a brighter street and I walked along very, very posh houses. And I thought, you know what? I can't drive. You can't go up and knock on the door of one of these houses. Because I just thought, I couldn't think of a simple way to tell a story that didn't sound like I was trying to, you know, con people into stealing their posh dog or something.
I need to. So now I am getting increasingly anxious and increasingly anxious.
Good.
And the people we are meeting in the restaurant are phoning very worried because we're never late.
Phoning on both phones.
And they're phoning on both phones. So eventually I answer the phone and I said, and I explain the situation. And the guy is a lawyer and he's smart. And he goes, okay, he says, well, have a look at Waze or whatever. There might be an accident. I says, I'm trying to find. He says, I will look at Waze, which is the app that tells you about accidents on roads. I will also look at the Citizen app, which will talk about a hit and run. Because I assumed that the girl, you guys had phoned the cops, that there was a whole incident going on, that the girl was being treated.
No.
So then I saw an ambulance flying past, right?
No.
So I immediately turned and followed the ambulance because I assumed that was the ambulance heading towards it. But of course, you can't follow an ambulance.
So I walk along
this
really...
They can go through red lights.
Meanwhile, I walk along this really quite nicely lit, luckily, road with all the beautiful houses, and I think I can't walk into any of these houses. No one's going to let me in. No one's going to hand. So then eventually, in the distance, I see a busy road.
Even with your white privilege.
Even with my white privilege. In the distance, I see a busy road, and I see at the corner, manna from heaven, a 7-Eleven. Then I realise, of course, I don't have a mask. So I look in, and there's a guy, I think Indian, and he's wearing a mask, right? And of course he's wearing a mask. And I kind of go do this indication, I'm not wearing a mask, but can I come in? I've got a problem. And eventually he allows me in. But there's a little bit of, you know, back and forth where he wants me to wear a mask and I'm saying I don't have a mask. So then I go in and I kind of, you know, I basically tell him the story, but I don't think he really understood. Can you phone my husband? Can you phone? And so the next thing, he takes the phone out, he dials the number, and he hands me the phone, which was really kind. And I said to Phelan where I was. And then Phelan sped up and got me. And I went back into that shop.
I was 6 minutes away.
I went back into the shop. I got money off my husband. And I went back into the shop. And a new guy was behind the desk at that point. And I said, where's the other guy? He rang the bell. The other guy came out. He wasn't wearing a mask. I said, are you the guy I just spoke to? And he said, you want to talk to your husband? And I went, oh, you are the guy. And I gave him $20. And I can tell you one thing. It was like every Christmas in his lifetime had just happened at the one time. It was the best money I ever spent. Eventually, we got to the restaurant. And I have to say, a couple of big takeouts from this story. One, how nice was I when you turned up in the car, Phelan? Much nicer than you expected.
Much nicer than I expected. I was expecting a legitimate tirade.
Now, I realise that you're a good guy and you went off and tried to do the good thing, Robin Hood style. But I think quite quickly after I got in the car, I said, this needs to never happen again. And the answer from you was, this will never happen
again. This will never happen again. And my answer also is, take your phone every time you get out of the car.
No, I think this will never happen again. And also, by the way, I think it's not a great idea to speed after people who are clearly criminal types, because who in their right mind would speed off when somebody's on the ground and you've hit them with your car. Like, who would do that? This is a lunatic. This is a bad person, by the way. Okay, not that I'm segueing from the saying bad person to Hunter Biden, but that's just the way it seems to be. Hunter Biden is in the news for lots of reasons.
Lots of reasons.
For lots of reasons. And you probably know his memoir is coming out in April. And it'll be published by, I think, Simon & Schuster.
It's called Beautiful Things because he really likes buying beautiful things.
Appearing all week. Phelan McAleer, yes, with the one-liners.
Can't
so basically
up.
He
take
is,
my wife, please.
He's Beautiful Things. He's got an advance of $2 million. And interestingly enough, well, tell us about the memoir first, Phelan. What do you think this memoir is going to do? Do you think it's going to tell us the whole, break down the whole Burisma thing, how he got on the board, how they chose him, why he's getting presents from Chinese people, why he got $3 million from the mayor of Moscow's wife? You think it's going to be all that nice detail?
This memoir is actually not for Hunter Biden. It's not for Joe Biden. It's not for his family. It's not for addicts everywhere. It's for journalists everywhere to say he's been very honest about his past.
Uh-huh.
And to
become a born-again virgin is what he's going to do.
Yeah, he's laundering himself. He's laundering, and he's allowing journalists to launder his past.
There you go.
By saying, well, he was, you know, why would we investigate Hunter Biden's past? Because he's been brutally honest. Our investigations couldn't uncover anything as brutally honest as his addiction memoir will be. But of course, the memoir will not talk, as you say, about the $3 million he got from the mayor of Moscow.
Let's listen to the President of the United States talk about his son's memoir that's about to come out.
New tonight, President Biden also discussed his son, Hunter.
You know, I'll bet there's not a family you know that doesn't have somebody in their family that had a drug problem or an alcohol problem.
Hunter addresses those problems in a new memoir.
But the honesty with which he stepped forward and talked about the problem and the hope that it gave me hope reading it. I mean, it was like, my boy's back. You know what I mean? Anyway, I'm sorry to get so personal.
Oh, it's very affecting, isn't it, Phelan? That's very affecting. As he says, he has his boy back. Can I just say, saying that about a grown man who is a father of five children is a little something, right? My boy back. It's where he's 12 years old.
I tell you, it's
you
know? A King Lear, their relationship, you know? And I think at the end of the day, I'm not sure Hunter likes his dad, but anyway.
Yeah, but I love this line, you know, from the president, you know, President Biden, the honesty with which he stepped forward. I think the word honesty and Hunter Biden, I don't think these are words that sit well together. But let's have a look at other news from Hunter Biden, which I think is very enjoyable, given the fact that on this particular program, you know that we have a particular affection for property and for looking at other people's property. So guess where Hunter Biden decided to come and live? He decided to come and live in Los Angeles. And he originally came, and a bit like us, Phil, a little bit like ourselves, he originally landed and spent time in the Hollywood Hills. We're having a look now, Phil, at the place he originally came to.
Yes.
Nice little pad. Just $12,500 a month. Do you know the way you pay that in rent? Sure, we're all doing it.
That's right.
So that was the lovely spot he was in there. But you know what? It wasn't good enough for
Phil.
Wasn't good enough for our Hunter. And you know what I think? It's kind of interesting, and this will be for anyone who's not from Los Angeles, a little bit of history, a little bit of geography of Los Angeles. Let us explain to you the problem with that property that you're looking at there, the one in the Hollywood Hills, is it's a bit isolated.
It's very
right?
isolated.
It's very
That's
isolated.
That's why we moved from the Hollywood Hills, actually.
Yeah, because we didn't like being so isolated, because we quite like cycling or walking to the coffee shops. And guess who else
and
likes that?
Out and, about.
And guess who likes that as well? Hunter. So here's where Hunter has moved to, this little property.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see this.
You'll see the lovely
and
photographs.
And if you're listening to it on the audio, really, you should.
You need to be looking on YouTube.
You need to go over to the YouTube. Because
to look at the photographs. So have a look at this. So this is the little property he's moved to now, which a real bargain, Phelan, by the way. It's a $5.4 million home, and he is getting it for the bargain price rental of $25,000 a month. Sure, we're all in those kind of houses.
People, please tell us in the comments if that is a good return on investment, actually, for the person. Actually, see, it's got a circular nautical window, like one of them submarines. That reminds me of that house between outside Bleak on the way to Bundoran. There's a house with a round window there.
Fair enough. That's a reference for you. We're looking now at the lovely living room there.
Yeah, by the way, that's Venice Boulevard behind it there. You see that?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, so here's what we know, by the way, and you guys, we stole these photographs from the Daily Mail, but they're actually from the MLS. These are property photographs. Directly opposite the street of where this property is now, it's quite funny. And Phelan and I, before we even knew that Hunter Biden had moved to Los Angeles, can I just say, we were driving around Abbot Kinney the other day, like we saw whatever, a month ago, whatever, maybe 3-4 weeks ago. And the next thing we saw, all these kind of big SUVs with blacked out windows. And yes. We said someone important must be in town.
Because, and these are not, you do see a lot of people in black SUVs here in LA with security details. But this was different because people in security details, they're pretty normal SUVs. These were not normal. These were completely blacked out. They were all information. And they were parked somewhere. I can't even remember where now. And I just thought it was odd. And it turns out it's Hunter. Can I also say, we should say that this house of Hunter's, I mean, it is literally within a stone's throw of our house.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we can literally... Well, back
he's
in the day,
he's basically following us, Phelim. He's following us, so I think he wants us to spend a lot of time on his expose because he's actually moved in. It's very convenient
and
for us.
We have to, you know, people. I'm sure you all know we're involved in a Hunter Biden project, which we're going to be going public with
very soon.
And I think this is a sign.
Okay,
let's talk about Hunter's property.
Here's the house. So let's have a look inside. There's the lovely living room there now. That's grand, and there's a window there down the
side.
That's
not the living room.
That's the living room, Phelim. That's the living room. Isn't that lovely? Look at how big that is, and look at the lovely skylights. Beautiful skylights.
I don't like this window much.
No, I don't love that. It is looking out on the wall. So if you look at that photograph, this is a huge living dining area. And by the way, two tables. And but you know what that's for, by the way? You know what that's for? The grown-ups table and the table for the five children. Oh, you know what? I bet it's not for the five children because one of those children lives in deepest, darkest Arkansas and has been denied repeatedly by his family.
The stripper's child probably sits...
The stripper's child doesn't get to go to that
house. Exactly, it's not allowed in the house at all, yeah.
Now we're moving into the master suite. And you'll see now the master suite. Very pleasant there,
what's
by
that?
The way.
What's that? That's a sauna, is it? No, what's that?
Oh, no. What is that?
That's a sauna.
Oh, that's a sauna. I didn't even spot
that. In the
master
suite?
So there's a sauna in the master suite. Well, you know the way you need that. And then, look, every house needs that. The rooftop deck with the lovely fireplace and the lovely lighting and the twinkly lights of Los Angeles in the distance.
Yes.
Isn't that lovely? And then here's another photograph because you know the way you need it. Even though you're right beside the beach, you do need a pool. So there's the little dipping pool that they have there, which is pretty small,
by
the
way. Can I just say something?
You can, Phelim, because it's your show.
It is the Alan Phelim show. I'm not an expert in addiction, right? But I just don't know if a $25,000 a month house in Venice, which has more drug addicts than you could shake a stick at, is a great move for a guy who's a drug addict and wants to stay clean.
That's right.
You know, there's just so, you know.
Sure, we're nearly falling over ourselves with all those pot shops. Like, which is legal here, right, by the way.
But also, there's drug addicts in every corner.
There are.
Camping and tent, you know. They could literally fire drugs up to his balcony. There's tons of drugs.
Well, you might have a small trouble doing that, given the fact that all these heavy boys are sitting in the cars. So he has this 24/7 security detail watching after him.
I have a question, Anne.
Will you go ahead and ask that question, you know, Phil? I hope I can answer it.
Well, actually,
did you make coffee?
I did.
For me?
No, for
myself.
No.
That's a bit naughty now.
Do you want the coffee?
No, I'll just drink my water. Go on ahead there.
I'm just drinking my coffee now.
Well,
you
enjoy
can see
that.
This on YouTube.
I could have a drink of that, but,
you could.
But there's no milk in it. Go on ahead.
So, if, you know, Hunter has been in many rehab facilities, some more successful than others. If in the event, and I don't wish this on anyone, that this one fails, and he wants to go out and buy drugs, or someone wants someone to come and deliver drugs, what's the position of the Secret Service in that situation?
Well, this is a question that I think we have a very intelligent group of people watching. We would like to hear from you because we'd like to know what's the situation there.
Put a comment in YouTube or put a comment in the podcast app.
If you want to go and visit him there at the house, does he have to register your name and look for... we need to know this.
Do people get searched going in?
This is it. We do not know that. Anyway, we will be keeping you up to date on all things Hunter.
Yes, all things Hunter, because we are launching a Hunter Biden project. So
from the ridiculous to the supremely ridiculous and awfully sad, Barry Weiss has written a piece.
She's the former New York Times columnist who resigned because the New York Times is an intolerable
place
to work.
She's become quite fascinated by how awful things are in schools across the United States. And we're going to, you know, and she's written an article about it that's in her Superstack. How do you say where it is, Phelim? We'll put the link
Substack.
Up. In Substack. We'll put it up, a link in the show notes. But basically the headline is Spirit Murder, Neo segregation and science denial in American schools. So people have been writing to her and telling her about what's going on in schools across the country. And funny enough, the first few schools that that people wrote to her about are here in Los Angeles. So Harvard Westlake is a private high school here. And the fees for Harvard Westlake are $41,300 a year. So there's a, I mean, isn't that a way of, I mean, it's not incredible. Imagine if you had four children. Well, you can, I mean, obviously, you know, you wouldn't be sending them to Harvard Westlake, I suppose. And by the way, there's more reasons for not sending your children to Harvard Westlake than just the fees. Mm-hmm. And here's the reason. Basically, the dean recently lavished praise upon Tamika Mallory and Linda Sarsour, both Louis Farrakhan fans, yes, in a high school-wide assembly.
The good old anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan, who's got more anti-Semitism than you could shake a stick at. And, you know, it's just amazing that these people are, you know, he praised them in front of the children.
Yeah. And then they have printed, the school, a 20-page plan outlining their anti-racist programs. And I printed it out, and it is unbelievable of what they're going to do. Recent and ongoing work addressing the effects of conscious and unconscious bias in science, mm-hmm, in ninth grade biology film.
The boiling point of water is hugely racist.
It is. And sexist. And yes, it's probably ageist as well, by the way. Yes. The other thing that they're going to spend time
gravity,
doing...
Gravity.
The other thing, and Phelan has a brilliant answer to this that he's going to say in 1 minute here.
I do?
Yes, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to remind you what it is. I'm welcoming Basil Kincaid and Jana Ireland, two prominent black actors, our artists, to display their work, speak at the school assemblies, and teach master classes with students in visual arts. Actually, that's not... There's nothing that bad in that.
I would wonder
assessing,
what the arts...
Hang on, I love this, though. Assessing word problems in math and rewriting them to be more representative and culturally sensitive. Any idea what that's about, Philip?
Yeah, well, I don't know what that's about, but I do know China is...
China are celebrating.
Laughing. They're having a ball. They're saying, we're producing physicists, chemists, biologists, yeah, people to make the Wuhan flu in labs, people to make weapons, people to steal other people's intellectual property. All people to use, steal other people's software, hardware, the whole thing, and they're assessing word problems in math and rewriting them to be more representative and culturally sensitive.
And they're also redesigning the 11th grade U.S. history course from a critical race theory perspective. But it's not just Harvard Westlake. Dalton, which is in Manhattan, tuition $54,180 a year, makes Harvard Westlake look almost conservative. This is Barry Weiss. That's her analysis. So they have a manifesto to deal with anti-racism, which is only 8 pages long in comparison to the 20 pages from Westlake.
I wouldn't send my child there.
But its demands include abolishing high-level academic courses by 2023 if the performance of black students is not on par with non-blacks. Can you help me with that one, Phelan? They're going to abolish high-level academic courses. They're going to abolish them. So what will they replace them with? Low-level academic courses. Anyway, they're also, by the way, and of course this is where the money is coming from. That's why it's going to cost. They're going to hire 12, this is a high school, 12 full-time diversity officers and multiple psychologists to support students coping with race-based traumatic stress.
If you're the child of Jewish people whose grandparents, say, for example, were killed in the Holocaust.
Correct.
Would that be would you qualify?
I don't know, because the problem with that is that you might be white.
So
you'd be white, you see.
So basically, that thing about, you know, if the performance of black students is not on par with non-blacks, do you know the most successful ethnic grouping in the United States at the moment?
I do, because you've told me a few times.
It's Nigerians.
Who are black.
Yeah, so what basically they're going to do is get a bunch of Nigerian children in there, and that'll get them...
That'll get it sorted.
Yeah.
Brentwood, another school. Tuition is $45,000 there. They've announced some dialogue and community building sessions. We're going to put this thing up on screen. You won't believe this. Which actually segregates families by race.
This is very sad.
Look at the screen right now. So what they're going to do is, and here you go, Thursday, January the 28th, white faculty are going to meet. And in the afternoon, black faculty. White staff, black staff. White parents and families, black parents and families. I'm reading this schedule that they have here. Wednesday, February the 3rd, Hispanic and Latinx parents. Phil, what's Latinx? Remind me what Latinx means.
As Michelle Obama would say, Remember when Michelle Obama used to say Latino?
Latino.
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 Obama say that?
Latino.
She can do it better. Let's do it again, Michelle.
Latino.
That's everyone that said Latino and Latina is
always racist.
Sexist and sexist.
There you go. So you say Latinx. Parents and families. Upper school. So basically they're doing segregation. And by the way, we had heard this. We have a friend who basically took his kid out of school when the school started doing this segregation thing and dividing children into these different ethnic groups.
We know kids who've been at school and never known that they were black, never known there was any racism until the school told them.
Yeah, and then they were devastated. But it's not just these private schools that have this nonsense. The public schools are just as bad. So the San Francisco public school system has not been open since the beginning of the pandemic.
Latino.
But the board just renamed 44 schools, including those named for George Washington, obviously slave owner, colonizer, Herbert Hoover, who accepted apparently white supremacy, and John Moore, who I thought he was a big environmentalist, right?
Yes.
The racist. But watch this clip. This is magnificent. Watch this clip. This, by the way, it's kind of funny, right? But it's not really
who
funny.
Is she?
So she's an education commissioner, Allison Collins, who will explain what's wrong with merit. Merit.
Yeah.
That merit is actually racist. Let's have a listen to her.
When we talk about merit, meritocracy, and especially meritocracy based on standardized testing. I'm just going to say it. In this day and age, we cannot mince words. Those are racist systems. Well, if you're going to say that merit, you know, is like fair, it's the antithesis of fair, and it's the antithesis of just.
So there you have it.
That is
merit
very
is
sad.
The antithesis of fair. It's the antithesis of fair.
It's very sad.
It's unbelievably sad. And I mean, here's the problem with all of this. If you, God help you, you know, got cancer or whatever, and you end up in the hospital and the oncologist is coming towards you, are you going to be saying to yourself, are you going to be looking at that person? And if that person is from an ethnic group, think, did you actually do as well in the exams as the other guy? Because I don't care what color you are. I just want the best oncologist.
Yes.
I want the one who did, I want this to be a meritocracy. I want people to have done their exams and come to the top and done really well, and that be the person that is wielding the knife or giving you the chemotherapy. And again, by the way, this is happening everywhere. The Seattle public schools are saying that the education system is committing spirit murder against black children.
As opposed to the actual murder of black children that's taking place in many inner cities. I mean, Chicago, every weekend, there's a black school child killed by other black people.
Yeah,
but
we're not out in the streets for that.
No.
And the New York City public schools are telling white teachers they are guilty of the same. Spirit murdering has even been made its way into the new administration. Joe Biden's Deputy Secretary of Education, Cindy Martin, a superintendent of the San Diego school system, she endorsed the idea, as well as the notion that white teachers should undergo anti-racist therapy. And by the way, it's not a suggestion. It's mandated.
I thought spirit murdering is what people in Ireland do in pubs after 1 a.m. on a Friday night. Boom, boom.
Oh,
whiskey there, barkeep. Spirit murdering.
But have a check this lovely guy out. David Kirkland is the Vice Dean of Equity.
David Kirkland, no relation to Costco.
No relation to Costco, but we're going to talk about Costco later. The Vice Dean of Equity at NYU Steinhardt Metro Center has upped the ante, saying that schools are murdering the bodies of our children. Let's have a listen to him.
Today, I want to ask, how might we change our job descriptions in this moment of pause? How might we, in a post-COVID education world, make education, you know, more anti-racist, more culturally responsive and sustaining, and radically reimagine for all of our students? How do we call for new institutions that, instead of murdering the bodies of our children, love them instead?
So there you have it.
And this is all for, this is from Barry Weiss's...
This is from Barry Weiss's fabulous column, where she goes into all of this kind of stuff. But it goes on, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. It's really terrible. And then before I read Barry Weiss, I had come across this Twitter thread, this awful Twitter thread. So, you know, and this is from, so a writer and columnist was asked, her name is, by the way, and you can check this out yourself, Anne Bauer. And I think she's not, you know, I think she's definitely a liberal. She was asked to sit in on a Zoom meeting of parents from the Minnesota area. She doesn't identify exactly where in Minnesota this happened, but there was a Zoom meeting allowing parents to discuss what was going on with their kids who have not been in school for a year. She says, I'm not going to name the district or the legislator. I was a guest and that's their business. The thing I will tell you, however bad, sad and depressing I thought it would be, it was worse. So she said, let me start by saying this is a wealthy district, maybe one of the top five in the state. The parents are almost all white professionals. To be honest, I almost discounted it. I thought, they're fine. They'll be all right because they're rich, right? There were parents who said they'd never seen their kids dark or hopeless or unhappy. And I believe it. Their suburb is the Shangri-La of Minnesota.
I know. We know the places.
We know those places. They described girls who hid in their rooms and cried, and boys falling so far behind they might never catch up. Over and over, because they were nice people, they kept on acknowledging during this Zoom that they were really lucky. They said they have money for tutors and electronics, but they're worried about families that don't. I believe them. Still, what surprised me is how money didn't make this situation better for these parents. These parents looked terrified. Wait till you hear this. This is just terrible. Two of the fathers cried. One turned off his video because he couldn't keep it together. Two of the moms had outbursts, and I couldn't blame them. And it goes on and on. It's just horrible. But the interesting thing as well, of course, is that they have a senator in on the phone call, right? Mm-hmm. They have a senator in on the Zoom, you know. They had a child, by the way. One of the people who spoke at the Zoom thing was a child, a teenager who was about 15. And she was so eloquent and dear and intensely respectful. This is Anne Bauer saying it. She started sobbing halfway through and said she got to a very dark place and she didn't know if she'd ever get out. So the senator was then asked to speak. Now, as Anne Bauer says, the senator was in a very tough spot and she thanked everyone. Then, as Anne Bauer says, then, oh my God, this is true. She talked about the trade-offs and the fact that other businesses also had to deal with shutdowns. So someone had to remind her that schools aren't a business and weren't supposed to act like businesses. And at this point, she pivoted and, for reasons I will never understand, started talking about how she herself had to go to the Capitol because she was a public servant and there were certain partisan senators refusing to wear masks. Like, she just went, you know, basically talked complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. But this is the kind of story we're seeing all over the place.
The government is killing your kids.
But Anne Bauer ends the Twitter thread by saying, my advice to every... This is incredible, by the way. My advice, and as I said, this woman is liberal. My advice to every parent in Minnesota tonight, and remember, I'm raw. And this is, she was really upset when she heard these people talking about what was going on with their kids. And on edge, and probably not in my calm state. My advice, move. Kids are going to in-person school in Florida and in Texas and Pennsylvania and MA. Where's MA?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. We're one of the few places that is broken. Go. I would. But tell Governor Tim Walz when you do. Isn't that incredible?
Amazing.
Really terrible. Just awful.
So Rashida Tlaib, yes, the wonderful congresswoman. Let's hear her describe the terrible days of January the 6th. When a gunman came in and started shooting members of the Democratic Congressional Caucus who were playing baseball. Oh, no, sorry.
That was a different one.
That was Bernie Sanders' supporter who did that, who almost wiped out 10% of the Republican caucus, but no one remembers that. So let's hear her talk about how a bunch of protesters and a mob went in and basically did a sit-in in Nancy Pelosi's office. Let's hear her talk about the trauma.
So what happened on January 6th, all I could do was thank Allah that I wasn't here. I felt overwhelming relief, and I feel bad for Alexandria, so many of my colleagues that were here. But as I saw it, I thought to myself, thank God, I am not there.
So she wasn't there, Phil.
So, you know, stolen valor is a thing that I've only learned about when I came to America. We don't really have that idea in the UK, stolen valor. But then can you have stolen trauma as well? And so she's stealing it, as you can see there in the video. Standing beside her is AOC.
So she's stealing the trauma from AOC, but the really funny thing is that it didn't happen to AOC either.
Well, you know, at least AOC was in the building, in a building.
In a building, but very far away from any trauma.
And no danger. So it's like kind of non-post... non-traumatic stress virtue signaling. That's the world we live in, folks.
That's the world we live in. And I mean, obviously she was, I don't know, it was in a coma or on a different planet during the summer when there were riots and 40 people died. I mean, we're not hearing about that at all.
And her
right?
colleagues were shot on a baseball field by a supporter of Bernie Sanders.
So, by the way, the other thing that just occurred, and that I think we talked about over the weekend, Phelan, was, you know, this thing that four people died.
Five
people died on January 6th.
That's right.
Well, Yeah, and now we've found out a very interesting thing about the police officer, correct? The police officer who lay in state, by the way, right, at the Capitol.
Has no injuries. But now they're trying to blame, a bit like the story
In the Resident.
In the Resident, they're trying to blame maybe mace spray or pepper spray. I mean, that's the straw. So only one person died from injuries sustained during the riot, and that was someone shot by a Capitol police officer through a door.
The woman from San Diego.
Yeah.
But let's have a look at this peace-loving, gentle, traumatized, traumatized by a non-traumatic event, Talib Rashid. Let's see that gentle person earlier.
At
a previous event.
Let's
have a look. Let's run it.
You guys are crazy!
You're an animal! Get a job!
Ooh, that's her being violent at a Trump rally and having to be carried out, basically, because she's disrupting a political process.
She's what's called a liar.
Or a hypocrite.
Yeah, both of them. Anyway, moving on. Oh, Phelan, what did you find out about Costco chicken?
Actually, very little. I found out very little about Costco chicken. It's hilarious. But I did find out that the New York Times now believes that people going in undercover into places with video cameras and secretly recording, this is now journalism. So let's have a little look at some of that footage. But so it's an opinion piece by Nicholas Kristof.
And it's called The Ugly Secrets Behind the Costco Chicken.
Yeah, so as he says, an investigator went undercover and brought back disturbing video from a farm growing these famous birds.
Yes.
And he's praising the undercover footage.
Yep.
Whilst this is the very paper that constantly condemns James O'Keefe, constantly condemns David Dalyden for doing exactly the same about much more serious comics. David Dalyden was recording people buying and selling parts of babies.
Of human beings.
Of human beings. You know, yes, it's not good to have chickens in miserable
conditions. We don't want chickens.
But by the way, let's hear just how miserable it is to be a Costco chicken. And the group is called Mercy for Animals. You know, and by the way, if you don't know about Costco chickens, they're
a lost leader. They're $4.99.
But they're famous.
They're famous.
Everyone raves about them, as Anne does as well.
Yes.
And here's what Mercy for Whatever Animal says. It's dimly lit with chicken poop all over, said the worker who filmed there. It's like a hot, humid cloud of ammonia and poop mixed together. So it smells really badly. It's a chicken farm. If you know, one thing he does talk about is Herbert Hoover. You know, he ran on an election in the 30s, I think it was. I'm going to put a chicken in every pot. And that's back when chicken was people don't remember this, of course. Chicken used to be a luxury item. You know, now it's people almost look down on chicken because it's so cheap and so ubiquitous. And that's because they put these chickens in these big places. And then there's this quote from Leah Garces, the president of Mercy for Animals. They're living on their own feces with no fresh air and no natural light. I don't think that's what a Costco customer expects. I can tell you now, I've spent a little time on farms in my life. That is a lie. They are not living on their own feces. Like, don't be ridiculous. You want to kill chickens? You want to kill any animal? Have them eat their own feces. Like, I mean, it makes no sense at all. Like, one of the big problems with pigs and chickens is that a lot of them are dying. You know, if you have a million chickens, there's a high death rate. And they will do everything. It costs a lot of money. They want to do everything to keep these chickens alive.
And healthy.
And healthy. So.
But I love this. Can I just, from this Nicholas Kristof thing, it's amazing. And as Phelan says, keep in mind how David Dalyden was treated for exposing something a lot more serious, a lot more important. Here's Nicholas Kristof. When I began writing about these issues, I never guessed that McDonald's would commit to cage-free eggs. Woohoo! That California would legislate protections for mother pigs. Oh. That there would be court fights about whether an elephant has legal personhood. And that Pope Francis would suggest that animals go to heaven and that the Virgin Mary grieves for the sufferings of mistreated livestock. Can you believe this is written, that they've written this with a straight face? I mean, it is unbelievable. While we actually know what David Dalyden did, which he should have got every possible journalism prize for, was exposing the sale of human beings and and the aborting of babies in special ways where they wouldn't crush the calvarium so that you could get more money for it. And back to Nicholas Kristof, still the issue remains, as the English, I mean, this is so tone deaf, I just can't believe it. Still the issue remains, we're back to the Costco chicken here, by the way. The issue remains, as the English philosopher Jeremy Bentham posed in 1789, the question is not, can they reason? He's talking about the chickens. Nor can they talk, but can they suffer?
Actually, you know what would be
can
good?
You believe
I
this?
I might go back into this article and replace chickens with fetuses.
Oh, yeah.
And replace Mercy for Animals with David de Leiden.
Yep.
I bet the whole article would still make sense and be a lot more emotive.
Oh, yeah.
I might do that, actually.
Just read this. Read this in the context of what David
still, the
did.
Issue remains, as the English philosopher Jeremy Bentham posted it in 1798. The question is not, can fetuses reason? Nor can fetuses talk, but can they suffer?
And we know the answer to that. And they can suffer. And that's why the bill that was recently rejected by the legislators in Washington, the piece of legislation they rejected was a piece of legislation. Well, actually, they've rejected loads of legislation, but the most recent one was that a baby born alive, where they made a mistake in the abortion and the child is alive, that child should get all of the, you know, emergency treatment, right?
Yeah.
To save that baby. And all of the legislators in their wisdom voted against that. That's where we're living. That's the world we're living in now.
Yep.
Everything's upside down. Everything's completely crazy. And it's very depressing and it's very awful. And you know what you do need to do into an awful depressing and upsetting situation like that is you need to do something to save your soul. And you can say a prayer and you can also make chicken soup. And it's a very nice segue from talking about the Costco chicken, which is an amazing thing. And every time you go to Costco, you should always pick up one of them because they're marvelous. And if you eat a little bit of the Costco chicken and there's quite a little bit of the chicken left, my advice to you is to make chicken soup. And chicken soup, we have rediscovered chicken soup, haven't we, Phelan?
Yes.
And it's just been so nice. So this is the recipe of the week, is chicken soup. And I love this quote, by the way, from, what's his name? That guy there, Yobin Okalinga. Almost every culture has its own variation on chicken soup, and rightly so. It's one of the most gratifying dishes on the face of the earth.
And one of the cheapest dishes on the face of the earth because of the ability to grow chickens in huge houses cheaply.
And by the way, we're not, I mean, I don't like the idea of cruelty to animals, by the way, but I actually think you can do, if you like, you can honour the food, you honour your food, if you know what I mean. You can honour that chicken by using every bit of that chicken. So here's what you do if you've got a little bit of leftover chicken after roasting a chicken. Put the carcass into a pot, and you're watching me doing it right now. And you're throwing in, you know, basically throw in the kitchen sink after that. So what I did, what we did the other day, is put the whole leftover chicken into the pot, add celery, carrots, onions, parsley, ginger, garlic, peppercorns, bay leaves, and parmesan rinds, by the way, when you make...
What is a parmesan rind?
So when you have your parmesan cheese at the end, there's that hard bit, and a lot of people throw it out. Never, ever throw out the parmesan rind. Keep all your parmesan rinds, or any rinds of any cheese. Keep the whole lot, and when you're making soup, throw those rinds in, and you're going to get all that lovely gooiness off the cheese. Any cheese bits as well, throw that in, some salt, into a large soup pot, and cover it with cold water. Then bring it to a boil, but immediately, the minute...
You have to watch this now.
You have to watch it very carefully.
James Dellingpole, and I heard him talk about this, that if you allow it to boil and keep boiling, you ruin your stock.
So what you want to do is you want to have it shimmering. Bring it down to the lowest possible level, just where you see a smallest break of bubbles on the surface, and leave it there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever time you have. And then, when that's done, you remove the chicken, and you can do that with a thongs. You see the way, and it'll fall to pieces. The chicken will fall to pieces. Take the chicken out and discard all the bones. Then with the bit of then you'll find loads of chicken, by the way, floating around, and you'll pull off lots of chicken. Keep that chicken and cut it up onto pieces once, obviously, it's cooled down. Taste your broth and simmer it down until it gets more concentrated so you can bring it down a little bit less. I didn't even do that, by the way. We didn't even do that. And then strain everything from the broth. Strain it all into a sieve. And what I would do, and they don't always say this in the recipes, I would pull out the vegetables that are there in their sieve and throw them back in, like your bits of celery, your bits of carrot, throw them back in, your bits of onion, throw them all back in. And then you're putting your meat of your chicken back into the pot, And at this point, now I did this. You don't have to do this. I added a spoonful of this stuff, which I
what
just,
is it?
It's, I love it. It's called hot chili sauce. It's lo gan ma.
And spicy chili sauce.
Chili, it's called, it's a crunchy chili crisp condiment, which I really like. And it's not super hot. Just a spoon of that is very nice. I also threw in a little bit of cream that I had, again, just hanging around the fridge that was going to have to be thrown out. So I just threw that in, by the way. You don't have to. And then I had some egg noodles that I'd bought on a sale and I'd never used them. So I threw them in. They'll take 4 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes. And then just bring your soup to a little simmer for 3 or 4 minutes and taste it again, salt and pepper. And you know what? It'll just do you good. It'll do you the world of good to eat that. We have just enjoyed it no end. I think it's going to be in a heavy rotation with us from now on. Something else we thought that we'd share this week that I thought was really sweet. There's a boy, young man. His name is Sam Wilmot. He's 23 years old from a small town outside of Bristol, England. And he, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, he was basically, you know, he had to go home basically. And he decided, he was out one night with friends before, I think just before the thing ended. And he started talking about how much he likes sitting on benches and how he kind of rated them in his mind. Mm-hmm. And his friends, for a joke, said, you know what you should do? You should have an Instagram account and you should call it Rate This Bench. And he has an Instagram account called Rate This Bench, and it's really, really fun. You'll see the guy himself sitting here. He's a bit rotund, and he's got this very serious face. And then beside each of these photographs, he writes this description of the bench, of whether or not it's sturdy, whether the arms are nice, whether it's nice for its back, and he gives it a rating out of 10. No bench has got 10 out of 10 yet, by the way. And I just thought there's something pure and lovely about it, and the one photograph is facing him and the second photograph is from his back, from his head, of the view of what he can see from the bench. I'd highly recommend it.
Rate This Bench, it's on Instagram.
Rate This Bench, it's on Instagram.
Yes, so woke TV, wokeness is killing my TV viewing. And I take my TV viewing very seriously, especially my bad TV viewing. And, you know, I watch all the procedurals. I watch The Resident. I watch, you know, The Good Doctor, The Bad Doctor.
SUV.
Well, I can't watch that anymore. It's just too woke. But it was woke before everyone was woke. But since basically the George Floyd, etc., they've just gone all completely woke. And, you know, if any of you ever watched these medical procedurals, it basically involves lots of young, good-looking doctors and nurses having sex, and having family problems, and then solving strange diseases with dynamic and
innovative
techniques and intelligence, and they know people, and then they realize people are lying, or they realize people do certain, you know. So it's basically a detective, a couple of detective shows in a medical procedural. And in The Resident, which more than most was all about young people having sex a lot, they've just gone completely woke. For example, there was this part of the show where a woman comes in with her daughter. The daughter is ill. Suddenly the woman has a heart attack gets chest pains and collapses. And then we flick to the next scene and they're there with the girl, the daughter in bed beside her, and the mother seriously ill. And they're all wondering what could be wrong. And here's what's wrong and here's how they solve it. Let's play that clip.
Kinesis of the posterior basal wall, circumflex infarct, explains the non-diagnostic EKG.
Is it that bad? It sounds bad.
But mom collapsed because she's actually having a heart attack right now.
Oh my God, how is that possible?
EKG shows evidence of another heart attack in the past.
Has your mom ever had chest pain or shortness of breath before?
The protest. When George Floyd was murdered? We made our signs and we went out there. It was supposed to be peaceful, but it didn't matter. They tear gassed us all.
That must have been awful.
I recovered pretty quickly, but mom said she felt like an elephant was sitting on her chest. I wanted to take her to the hospital, but she was afraid we were going to catch COVID again. Back then, we didn't know if that was possible. She was afraid.
Okay. That could be it. Tear gas can cause stress on the heart and aggravate cardiac issues.
It's embarrassing that they're shoehorning. I mean, it's just like, I remember when they used to, you know, has she been on holidays anywhere? Oh yeah, she was in Connecticut. Oh, she's picked up a tick disease, Lyme's disease, which melded with her diabetes, which means she got this one in a million rare syndrome
yes.
that makes her talk backwards.
Yes,
you know?
Which is very fun. And yes. that was, yeah, yeah. And it was like probably something real as well.
Yeah, yeah, it is real. And it must have been great fun trying to fit people's lives into these stories and the sex lives, all that. Now they just go, oh, we need a woke illness now. And that's all across the board, and it's destroying TV. And in fact, next week we hope to talk about, to John Nolte from Breitbart, about how wokeness is destroying, as he says, the golden age of TV. So it's mm-hmm. bad enough on primetime, ABC, NBC. But, you know, do you remember a few years ago they talked about Netflix and HBO, this golden age of television, yes, all the yes. actors. And now all these TV series on these streaming services are being destroyed by wokeness. And they're not focusing on storytelling. They're not focusing on developing characters. Or developing characters. They're focusing on making preachy, stupid political points. So well done. You're just accelerating the destruction of your medium to score stupid virtue signaling political points. I hate you. Good night. So next week, yes, as I say, we'll have John Nolte on, but that's us from this week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
We did something else interesting over the weekend, didn't we, Anne? Was there something?
Did we? Super Bowl?
Super Bowl. But no, there was something else. Super Bowl, nothing much to say. Halftime show, no politics. Excellent. Fantastic.
Surprising, actually.
If there was politics, it went over my head. But it was nice to have a show without any politics. And yes, well, okay, listen, see you next week. Don't forget to leave comments on YouTube. Leave comments in the podcast app. We really want more comments and more ratings. Love having you on board. Love to tell you more about the Hunter Biden project when we can. Please go to Unreported Story Society if you want to help us keep doing what we're doing. We Please. Need your help.
Yes.
Everything is gratefully received. Thanks and goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye.